Good morning, everyone, and certainly we'd like to apologise from the table here for the delay occasioned by the need to move, which was both a positive as well as negative. It amounted, consequence was the delay. The positive side is that we have a broader group of people in the industry here with us today. So that's positive. We would also like to welcome committee members. I would just like to remind committee members, it's not possible for me to see anyone on my direct left because I don't see with my left eye, and therefore I can see at this point from Ms. Van, the Honourable Van der Merwe up. I can't, if I, the only way I can see you is to do this for you. So it'll be very difficult for me to see you every 5 minutes. Can I just ask everyone just to shift down one? I do apologize for that. All right. Having said that, I would also like to, in a very short opening and welcome, just wish and hope that everyone, all the women present here today were able to celebrate Women's Day with the support of not only society and community in general, but also their families, in particular their partners and their children. And I do hope we were all, in celebrating Women's Day, able to recognize both the achievements and the challenges that remain for not just women sitting in these halls and this house, but also, as the poems suggest, that are on the walls of Parliament. There are some women who've had very, very difficult circumstances from birth, and perhaps what is inspiring is that they've been able to rise above that and retain the aspirations that their mothers or someone close to them gave them. So we do also wish to thank the men. The men are, after all, our sons, our fathers, and our husbands, and our brothers, of course. And we know that there are many men here that are greatly supportive of women that they know and live with, but also women in general in society at large. And we thank you, men, now for playing a greater role in supporting women. It doesn't take only a woman to bring up a child. It takes a man and a woman and a community. Thank you. Perhaps now to get on to trade and industry and the agenda that is before us here. We do have apologies. There may be others, but I'm only aware officially of two apologies. I have one here on behalf of the Honourable Khadebi Awad, He has a medical appointment, and I do hope that whatever the medical appointment is, it is not a serious one, and we hope he'll be back in good health very soon. We also have an apology from Pumza Mahwanishe on behalf of the Honourable Kamalo, who will be late, possibly unable. She is delayed at the airport, and that is on the Honourable Kamalo. As we all know, and I think I would certainly like to remind the committee secretary that we did ask to find out just where Ms. Kotze, Honourable Kotze, was recovering from and from which hospital. She went and had an operation, a scheduled operation, and once again we send our blessings to her and hope to hear more of her through the committee secretary so we can make contact. Those are the committee members that I'm aware of that will be late. We also have here at the Department of Trade and Industry, led by the Director General, Ms. Odwa Ntuli. We also have, of course, the commissioners, led by the chairperson, Ms. Astrid Luden, of the Gambling Review Report. Thank you very much. Thank you for your patience here as well. And among your team, I see you have your CEO, or is it the CEO of the National Gambling Board, Ms. Baby Twa? No, I see, I did say hello to her. And Professor Zamande would probably be late, I understand. Or is he also here? Where's Professor? Ah, yes, thank you. And Dr. Stephen Lowe will be late, is that it? Right. I gather then that others who are sitting here are stakeholders in that particular industry itself and members of the committee. I know we will get your details later. In terms of the adoption of the agenda, I would like to make one change here, and that is informed by the delay in beginning this meeting. We originally had scheduled the deliberations on the oversight report, you will recall. I think certainly we do not like to keep people waiting who've been here for an hour already. So we will go straight into, this is my proposal, to change that with the Gambling Review Commission. And to start with the Gambling Review Commission, have our tea break, continue the deliberations on that report, and then to bring back very shortly, we'll have the briefing on the DTI reports, which would then follow as is, the deliberations, and then follow that with the oversight report. This is a full-day meeting as such. It is not our intention to delay anything, members. Many of you have come to me. Let's try and proceed as swiftly as we can in a professional manner. So it's only to take deliberations on the oversight to the end, all right, that is just before the adjournment, and also to hand out the minutes for consideration, hand them out, but not to consider them. Is that, those are the changes I wish to put forward. Is someone proposed the adoption of that agenda? Thank you, Honourable Smuller. Seconded. Thank you, Honourable Kobasa. Right. It's our pleasure, really, to welcome you with another cap, Ms. Luden, and that is the cap that you've now taken off, but of course still holding on to while you account for this particular review, chairperson of the Gambling Review Commission. We would like to, first of all, though, ask the DDG, Ms. Ntuli, just to open, make some opening remarks in this regard. I'd also like to welcome yourself, Chief Director Nyatsi Tenzi. I can't see the parliamentary liaison officer. I know she's here, but all right. The intern, I do apologize. I forgot your name has just slipped my memory. Not that that's unusual, you know, for my memory. So my apologies to you personally. Just give us your name up here again. Thank you. Over to yourself, Ms. Ntuli.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. I think on behalf of the DCI, we welcome the opportunity that has been afforded to us to allow the presentation by the Commission of its findings. I think one of the things that that led to this particular exercise for us was the concerns around proliferation in the gambling industry, and also the perception that we are beginning to deal with gambling activities on a piecemeal basis, which might actually, you know, encourage either overstimulation or people to gamble a lot more. I think, as we see it in the department, it is not up to us to actually decide whether the country is over-gambled or not. So there should be a process that is objective, that would look at the circumstances, the concerns, the problems that are put forward by the stakeholders, analyze it against the current legislative framework, and be able to give us direction in terms of what could be done. And I think, in all honesty, the role of the Gambling Review Commission was exactly to do that, to look at all the elements, to look at all the concerns, to talk to the stakeholders, to talk to the industry, talk to everybody, because what is key about an industry like this is that you adopt a very balanced approach that looks deeper into the interest of growing the industry itself, so that it benefits the society from a job perspective, from all of the other areas. I think we've seen some of the benefits, but at the same time, we need to ensure that there isn't unintended consequences in terms of the impact on the society, on the impact of, on the social imperative of this country. So the Commission really played a role for us to give us at least a base to start talking in terms of policy direction. And I think that's really the essence that we would like their report to be taken as. It should be taken as an independent report of this Commission that has been commissioned by the Minister to do that for us. The second aspect of the need for this review really was also the technological development of this industry. We know that now a lot of things can be done now which could not be done ages ago through cell phones, through computers, and all of that. So that development also needed us to relook whether the legislative framework actually supports that kind of development. And the Commission obviously was expected to give us guidance in that as well. And we also required the Commission to look at the legislative framework as it is currently, and, you know, how it has been implemented, and whether there are actually any gaps, and if there are any gaps, what sort of intervention can be done. So in short, that's basically the mandate of this Commission. And we are glad as a department that the Commission managed to look at and take upon this task with the speed that it actually deserves, you know, under the circumstances. You know, it was supposed to take 12 months, but it was shortened to allow at least the report and the findings to be communicated through, so that any policy interventions could be proposed in time. And we are glad that we have the report now. I think we would not want to talk more or to express a view as a department, but I think to allow the Commission to present their report to yourself, and so that the committee can actually interact with the findings, with the recommendations that are in there, and then obviously the department would have an opportunity to express a view later on following the debates that will take place around this. So we would really allow the Commission to do that today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's over to yourself then, Chairperson. Susan, if there's anyone we have forgotten to note, please do so.
Honourable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, members, representatives from the Department of Trade and Industry, the CEO of the the National Gambling Board and CEOs of provincial gambling boards. Thank you. We welcome this opportunity to share with you the findings of our report, that is the report of the Gambling Review Commission. As you indicated initially, unfortunately not all of our members of the Review Commission could be here today. We were a five-member team consisting of Mr. Clement Manya, Dr. Lowe, Professor Nzimande, Ms. Boda Singh and myself. And Professor Nzimande is here. We are expecting Dr. Lowe. Both Mr. Manya and Ms. Boda Singh extend their apologies. Unfortunately, they had other engagements, but they are available to the committee for any further engagement should the committee be interested. We attempted in developing the recommendations, in doing our research and developing the recommendations, to be objective and balanced in our views. But it is quite a controversial area, and so I think some of the recommendations need to be seen in that context. As Ms. Ntuli has already, at a very high level, outlined the terms of reference for the Commission, but I thought it might be useful just to go back to some of the detail that we were requested to consider. Our brief was to do a holistic review of the gambling industry since 1996, to assess the social and economic impact of the industry, as well as proliferation in South Africa. We were also requested to consider whether regulatory bodies are effectively achieving their legislative mandate and to benchmark with other jurisdictions on best policy, best practice approaches. And then finally, to conclude our report with recommendations on policy positions. To give effect to this mandate, we had effectively, it took us 9 months to complete our report from our appointment in December 2009, through public engagements that we had in provinces and then with various industry players as well as civil society organizations. We also concluded an international benchmarking visit. We had two teams go to different jurisdictions, and then we submitted our final report at the end of September last year. The approach we took was very much to follow the mandate, and you'll see that reflected in our report. But our starting point for the report and for our assessment was to were the policy objectives of the Vihan Commission, which you may recall was a commission that effectively set the framework for the current gambling policy. The objectives set out in the Vihan Commission were, there were six objectives. The first was to protect society from the overstimulation of latent gambling by limiting gambling opportunities, to protect players and the integrity and fairness of the industry by strict control and supervision of the industry, to ensure the uniformity and harmonization of policy and legislation at all levels of government and across provinces through norms and standards and cooperation and coordination, the generation of revenue and taxes for provincial government and for good causes, the economic empowerment of the historically disadvantaged, and the promotion of economic growth, development and employment. The conceptual framework we use for our analysis, and that is essentially implied in the Vihan report, is this model that's outlined in the table. Effectively, in gambling internationally, both that includes also the lottery, there are three types of models that one can adopt, three different types of approaches. The first would be a revenue-driven approach, and the objective there is really to maximize revenue for government. In order to achieve that objective, one would place very few restrictions on advertising, and one would allow an unlimited number of products and variety of products with low payouts generally, so that the payout is lower, the operator retains more revenue. The second kind of approach is a consumer-focused approach, which seeks to maximize the welfare of the consumers that would be the players, the punters. And in this kind of approach, advertising would be approached with by effectively imposing requirements for the truth, so truth in advertising requirements. Again, the product variety would be unlimited, but the payout to the consumer, the punter, would be high. So one would require the industry to retain fewer profits. The third approach is called the sumptuary approach. And this approach seeks to accommodate existing demand for gambling while at the same time discouraging excessive forms of gambling. So in this kind of approach, one would generally restrict advertising, and it would be restricted to warnings and informational messages, so more of an educational kind of approach. There would be limited product variety, so one would limit the number of gambling products available, and the payout to consumers would be low, again, to discourage gambling. Now, what's implied in the Vihan Commission objectives and also in the current policy that's been implemented is two types of approaches. The first is a sumptuary approach to gambling, that is, other forms of gambling other than the lottery. And then, in the case of the lottery, a revenue maximization approach was adopted. So this is the conceptual framework that we also would like to come back to. The Commission did a holistic review of the gambling industry from in its evolution from 1996 to 2009. And what you see presented here is data from 2001. Essentially, our finding is that it's a mature and a small, mature but well-established industry. It has doubled its turnover between 2001 and 2009. But this must be seen in the context of an industry coming off a relatively low base. So it shouldn't be misinterpreted as saying that the industry is growing exponentially. It is coming off a low base and off the base of an industry that wasn't legalized until 1996. the industry currently offers direct employment to roughly 60,000 people. Most of the employment comes from the casino industry, and the casino industry also made substantial infrastructural investments as part of their commitments, their bid commitments. And although we have a maturing industry and a maturing regulatory framework, something that we found of concern is that we see that there still is an entrenched illegal component in place. As I already said, we have a well-established industry. Casinos and the lottery in particular are established as popular forms of gambling. And casinos probably constitute the largest part of gambling as a whole. The lottery accounts for 12% of the revenue, so the turnover in gambling, but 48% of the taxes. In fact, 48% is probably slightly understated, because what we showed there is $1.4 billion in funding for good causes. But in fact, if we added VAT to that, it would bring the figure up probably to about $1.9 billion. Other sectors have been struggling, though. So bingo, LPMs, and betting, which is generally seen as horse racing, are sectors that that are either struggling or that have struggled in the past. Betty and Bengo are sectors that internationally are also under pressure, basically because of competition from other forms, new forms of gambling, such as online gambling. And in other jurisdictions, what we saw is that this requires these sectors to modernize and also to find complementary different forms of revenue. So our finding in South Africa is certainly consistent with what we saw in the rest of the world. But limited payout machines, that's LPMs, I think it's a different situation. In fact, in most jurisdictions, LPMs are doing quite well, and in South Africa, they've been struggling. While, as you are aware, there are limits that have been placed on the number of casinos, that the number of casino licenses, that's 40. And while the limits on the casinos have been maintained, casinos, our finding was that casinos were, in fact, growing in size. So, as you will see, the number of tables in the casinos have been growing quite substantially, as well as the number of slot machines over a period of time. So, and if we consider these numbers and we contrast them with the rollout of the limited payout machines of 5,300 over a 10-year period, and 1,200 electronic bingo terminals over a 3-year period, I think that gives a bit of context to the situation with the LPM industry. It shows that the LPM industry is under pressure from different sources. It's facing competition from different sources. Other slot machines, both in casinos, as well as, of course, electronic bingo terminals. Our view as the commission certainly was that the rollout of electronic bingo terminals presented and presents an unplanned and possibly an unfair competition for both LPMs and casinos, because they are not subject to the same rigorous requirements that both LPMs and casinos are. International experience, our visit certainly to the UK showed that bingo halls have been struggling, as they were in South Africa, because I think bingo was very slow in taking off in South Africa. But, and so in the UK, they have diversified. They've looked for other sources of revenue. So they are allowed to have slot machines in the United Kingdom. But there's very strict limits on the number of machines and also the payouts that they're allowed to have. Our conclusion around LPMs was that in South Africa we still have a relatively low number of slot machines per population. So even if we had a full rollout of 50,000 machines in all the provinces, that would amount to 608 people per slot machine. In Italy, currently, we have 171 people per slot machine. And in parts of Australia, it's much lower, 67 people per each slot machine. So in South Africa, even if we were to roll out the 50,000 slot machines, LPMs, we would still have a relatively low number. We spent a lot of time on the social impact, and Professor Nzimande will be able to answer any questions you have on this. Essentially, our findings were that gambling and income are correlated in the sense that generally, people on higher income tend to gamble more. People on lower income tend to gamble less. People on lower incomes tend to gamble on lottery and scratch cards. And only a small segment of the lowest income group also frequent casinos. This finding may be disputed, and I think the casino industry undertook to do further research on this particular issue. I think we're not aware of what the outcome was, but perhaps it's something that the committee may inquire further on. Generally, we found that more gambling occurs where there's more formal gambling opportunities exist. So generally, gambling will occur where incomes are higher and gambling has been formalized. With respect to problem gambling, and I think we made a distinction in the report between compulsive gambling and problem gambling. Compulsive gambling could generally be associated with other compulsive problems such as alcohol, or potentially drug abuse as well, and it's very hard to deal with, very specific. Problem gambling is more broadly are people who believe that they have a system that they can beat the odds and overcommit themselves financially. Problem gambling in South Africa, according to the data that we have, peaked in about 2003 with the introduction of the lottery. So the lottery did have an impact on problem gambling, but the levels of problem gambling in terms of the numbers that we have been came down fairly soon after 2003 and have stabilized between 2005 and I think the latest data to at our disposal was 2008. And so from between 2005 and 2008, it stabilized. For low income groups, problem gambling tends to be mainly associated with informal gambling. And we found that this appeared to be a rising trend from the data that was available and something that we thought required further scrutiny. Internationally, South Africa's level of problem gambling is higher than it is at European, generally in Europe. And we're probably equivalent, roughly equivalent to the United States and just marginally lower than some of the Asian countries that have a strong, I'm not sure whether one would call it a gambling culture, but a greater propensity for gambling. So generally, we're aligned with middle-income countries. So our conclusion around problem gambling was that there wasn't any immediate grounds for concern about the level of problem gambling because it's stabilized. And the difficulty here are the numbers. It's very difficult to draw effective international comparisons because everybody calculates it differently. But we felt that we shouldn't be complacent about the levels of problem gambling in the country, and that we needed to reinforce the existing measures, especially around education, treatment, and prevention. We also examined youth gambling, and our finding was that underage gambling, that there's no crisis in South Africa, but that what we did find was there was a growing trend, possibly a growing trend. Of great concern to us were reports that we received that youth in impoverished areas were claiming to gamble, especially dice, in order to buy basic necessities and to pay for school fees. So some of this was anecdotal evidence from hearings, and some of this I think is borne out also by the research. It's probably also associated with the socioeconomic environment. So, as I mentioned, a lot of it is illegal gambling then, making people quite vulnerable. And dice and cards were the most frequently played. And this is also associated with criminal elements. So that's the connotation that playing dice certainly has. Another area of concern was the fact that minors seem to be getting significant access to the lottery. So that is a very accessible form of gambling, and we did find that what that was a matter of concern. So we would welcome school education programs to deal with the dangers of gambling and the risks. We also examined the measures that are currently in place to deal and mitigate sort of the harm mitigation strategies and regulatory measures that are in place. These would include, for example, prohibitions on minors entering gambling venues, the placement of ATMs, those kind of measures. And we our finding was that generally what we currently have in place in the legislation is aligned with international practice, that these could be enhanced if that was necessary. But what we thought would probably be more important is that these measures are effectively implemented at present. And here I think the issues around exclusion and self-exclusion of problem gamblers is probably one of the most significant issues. We were not convinced that sufficient emphasis was being placed on this by gambling operators. And we thought that this should be monitored through mystery shopping, so regulators or pretending to be problem gamblers or testing the exclusion system and testing the ease with which people can enter. I think a similar exercise was done in the United Kingdom and was very effective and very effectively highlighted the deficiencies. In terms of treatment and education, we found that there was no overarching strategy to guide the different role players. So there's no clear strategy on treatment and education of problem gambling. There's also no funding for independent research. The research that's currently being conducted is either conducted through the NGB on the social impact side or through the National Responsible Gambling Program, which is all industry funding. And we also couldn't get any clarity on the details or the effectiveness of the lottery program. They have a separate program on problem gambling, but we struggled to get full information on it, and we were not able to assess its effectiveness. We were also asked to consider the regulatory framework. as you, I'm sure, are aware, we have a system of, we have provincial regulators, and then we have the National Gambling Board and the National Lotteries Board, and then there's the National Gambling Policy Council, which is a body on which the Minister the Minister of Trade and Industry and the MECs, the relevant MECs of the provinces, are represented. Our finding was that the NGB and the National Lotteries Board have struggled in some parts of their mandate. So some parts of the mandate were clearly fulfilled, and in other areas there were there were certainly some areas where we felt that they had not achieved the full mandate. With the National Lotteries Board, I think it's well known that there have been enduring issues around the grant making and the distribution of funds. And we also found that there was not sufficient attention being paid to the regulation of sports pools. That is in the remit of the National Lotteries Board, but is effectively not very well regulated. I think the approach that had been taken by the National Lotteries Board is that they've licensed the licensed operator provides a product that is like a sports pool. But the reality is that the horse racing tote is also offering a sports pool. And it seems to be that there's some lack of clarity about who has jurisdiction over this. So there's definitely an area there that needs to be addressed. The NGB, we recognized that the role that was outlined for the NGB that is contained in the legislation is a very difficult role to fulfill. they one of their roles is to ensure harmonization and uniformity and to exercise oversight over provincial regulators. And this is a very difficult function to fulfill, especially if you don't have remedies. So there are no real remedies that the NGB has at its disposal to, in cases where a province does not act in accordance with the national norms. So that's one of the areas that we thought needed further review and thought, and we had some recommendations in this regard. We also found that the National Gambling Policy Council was not effective in resolving disputes, particularly effective, or in reaching agreement on policy matters, largely because there are different objectives between national government and provincial government. National government doesn't have a revenue objective when it comes to gambling, really, other than possibly through the lottery. And I think for provincial government, the gambling revenue is not—it's not a huge revenue, but it is still a significant revenue, independent revenue. It's the second largest source of independent funding for provincial governments. We thought that that might be contributing to some of the difficulties there at the National Gambling Policy Council, and thought that its role and its working needed to be reviewed. In terms of the provincial gambling boards and the regulation of gambling in general, South Africa is a well-regulated and a respected jurisdiction. We do have high levels of day-to-day compliance with the law by, for example, the casino industry. And the provincial gambling boards, we thought, by and large, were largely effective at monitoring compliance. There is definitely mixed evidence on enforcing illegal gambling. And there are definitely pockets of entrenched illegal gambling operations in the country, in certain parts of the country. We also found that there, and you will see this in the report, it's not really a major part of our remit, but the different regulators in the provinces were obviously displayed varying levels of efficiency in their operations. That largely is a function of the underlying revenue. So, for example, in Gauteng, the revenue is very significant, and so if you look at efficiency as the money that we spend on regulation versus the income to the province, because you have a lot of revenue coming from gambling in Gauteng because it's the biggest sector, you'll have positive efficiency. But in smaller provinces where there's a lower revenue, the cost of gambling probably is fairly fixed. So the relative efficiency will be lower in smaller provinces. So our overall conclusions then were that the policy that was adopted, which was one of the managed expansion of gambling. So since 1996, gambling has incrementally been expanded, and we thought that policy had largely been effective. We've avoided, by imposing limits on LPM rollouts on casinos, we certainly avoided some of the excesses that we thought we had seen in jurisdictions such as Australia and certainly also in the UK. So the limits that we've placed on the industry have been effective in those areas where it's been imposed. But our sense was that in certain areas where no limits had been imposed, there was creeping proliferation. For example, with respect to electronic bingo terminals, the number of bingo halls, there are no restrictions currently on that. The number of slot machines in bingo halls and in casinos, as well as the number of tables in casinos, those are all regulated at a provincial level. There are no national limits. And of course, there are different drivers for decisions, regulatory decisions. So our sense was also that the limitations that had been placed on the gambling opportunities had contained the social impact, and we see this quite noticeably around LPN. The destination gambling approach that we had adopted here, which is a separation of public spaces and gambling spaces, is important. And then we've also seen, of course, that the industry has generated substantial tax revenues, both for provinces but also for national government and for good causes. And it does contribute to employment, direct employment. We don't have a major problem with or concern around problem gambling, as we indicated earlier. And we found that the impact of legal gambling on the poor was not very big, except possibly for the lottery, that's quite accessible. But there, again, of concern is this growing illegal gambling. The regulatory measures, again, are fairly adequate, but they need to be implemented more rigorously. In particular, this distinction between public places and gambling venues. Because what we were seeing is that, for example, bingo halls are in major shopping areas, and you can access them from inside the shopping center. Casinos are also growing. Well, because it's a destination approach, so what you have are shopping areas sometimes and casinos quite close together. And what we felt was what needed to be maintained was the distinction separate entrances, so that you don't wander by, you're doing your shopping, weekend shopping in the supermarket, and on the way to the car, you happen to pass a gambling venue and you pop in quickly and you... before you know it, you've lost a lot of money. So we think that this distinction needs to be maintained and that there is a danger at the moment that we see that this is being eroded. We also found a certain level of disregard for the national norms and standards. And as a result, there are some inconsistencies emerging across provinces. So the harmonization that is necessary isn't that effective. And we also found, as I mentioned earlier, that the National Gambling Board and the Policy Council are not effective in ensuring consistency. And I stress here that with the National Gambling Board, it's not about the effectiveness of the institution from our perspective, but rather the tools that they have at their disposal. So, as a result, national gambling policy is being undermined. For example, around issues such as electronic bingo terminals and in other areas. And we believe that it's important as a country that we do have a national policy, because it's the national policy that distinguishes us and the approach that's been taken at a national level from countries like Australia that are now retrospectively, you know, they now are considering imposing limits, but they've already had a lot of proliferation. So we're in a very fortunate position that we've managed the growth of the industry, and we should continue doing so. We also believed that the lottery is very effective in generating revenue. And a decision, in a sense, needs to be made about whether or not this revenue maximization approach should be continued or whether it should be dealt with consistently with other forms of gambling. Our sense of it was that the revenue maximization approach should probably be continued, but that there's a need for better distribution of funds and more professionalized grant making. And overall, our conclusion was that the objectives that have been set out in the Vihan report and that are contained in our policy approach have been substantially met. and that the South African policy approach to gambling, certainly in comparison to many other jurisdictions, has been successful, but that we are at a critical time where there's the potential now for a lot of proliferation, and that we need to tighten some of the controls. So, then our recommendations. As I've already said, overall our belief was that the existing model and approaches should be continued. That means a sumptuary approach for gambling and a revenue model for the lottery. If we take the approach of a sumptuary model, that means to satisfy demand but not encourage more demand for gambling, there is opportunity, there is scope for the limited introduction of some new activities and possibly for the deepening of existing activities. But we felt quite strongly that clear limits needed to be set for all gambling activity, even in those areas where limits currently don't exist. So we needed to maintain the current limits that exist on casinos and on limited payout machines, and we need to introduce limits for bingo halls, for tables in casinos, for the number of seats both in bingo halls and casinos, slot machines, and of course sports schools. There needs to be a limit on the number of licenses. We also thought, given the current situation around EBTs, that there is scope possibly for a more nuanced approach to the policy on slot machines. Currently, there are only high-stakes slot machines allowed in casinos, and then low-stakes slot machines everywhere else. And we thought that there might be the opportunity to introduce a medium-stakes slot machine.
Welcome, Dr. Stephen Lowe.
Yes, we did get your late apology. Were you on the Comrades or something? I'm just looking at your, you know, attire, so it sounds as if you were pursuing some gymnastic game.
So we thought that there was the opportunity to introduce a medium-stake slot machine. And maybe we should just highlight now that the danger of electronic bingo terminals, as we saw it, is that they are high-stake machines. I think it's unlimited payouts. There's no real regulation around that we were aware of. So in a sense, we thought that medium-stake slot machines might be able to meet the industry halfway. Well, that was our proposal. We also thought, as I mentioned, very important that the distinction between public and gambling spaces should be maintained, and we should guard against the proliferation of slot machines in public venues. And here, again, the issue of separate entrances is very important. We also thought that an overarching policy on broad-based black economic empowerment needs to be developed and there needs to be proper monitoring of that. In terms of the existing forms of gambling, there were some specific recommendations, one of which is that we thought that a five-yearly license review for casinos would be useful, because it would allow the regulators to consider the extent of compliance of the industry, of the operator, the social impact in a particular area, the extent to which they enforce self-exclusion measures, and also broad-based black economic empowerment. And that we also should be maintaining this destination approach that we mentioned earlier, which is that effectively you need to travel to the casino rather than passing it by accident on a shopping trip. With respect to bingo, we felt very strongly that the electronic bingo terminals needed to be stopped and needed to be removed, and that the opportunity should be given to bingo halls to have medium-stake slot machines. We recognize that it's an industry that struggled, or sector that struggled, and that maybe it requires additional sources of gambling revenue,
So maybe at a licensed gambling venue, one can allow other forms of gambling to take place. We also thought that there needed to be very clear limits on the number of licenses per province for bingo, especially as I think the rollout is now being envisaged in a number of provinces, and that there should be limits on the number of machines that are permitted in each venue. A provincial rollout strategy should be developed similar to the one that was developed for LPN, where there was a phased rollout and following a social impact assessment, and that the same principles should apply to bingo halls as apply to casinos. With respect to LPN, this is the struggling sector. We thought that medium stake slots should be permitted in some venues, not in public venues, but they are, for example, at the moment, 40 slot machine venues, LPN venues, sites that are licensed, and that maybe in those sites that are contained, one could provide for medium stake slots, very carefully though. If that would not be possible, then consideration could be given to increasing the maximum payout slightly. It hasn't been changed since the initial introduction of LPM. There are inefficiencies. The industry is struggling to get some of the venues approved, particularly at a local level. And our recommendation here was that there could be licensing guidelines developed. Is something like this that's been implemented for local government in the UK, and that we could consider that here. There is also currently a requirement that a lot of the LPM sites should be in what's called PDI sites, so in low-income areas. And we believed that this requirement makes it economically difficult for the industry, but more importantly is socially probably undesirable. And we also felt, in conclusion on LPM, that decisive action should be taken against illegal slot machines, that undermines the industry, and also against electronic bingo terminals. Horse racing and betting, the Commission was not able to spend as much time on this sector as we would have liked. That would have been a commission in its own right. But our sense of it was that the ownership of race courses and the tote, which is currently joined, should probably be split, and that a funding model for race courses should be developed that is derived from the tote, from bookmakers, and from online operators as well. There are currently online bookmakers that are licensed. We should also allow the industry to, or the race courses, the industry to close down race courses that are not economically viable in some provinces, and or to be moved to a more viable location. And that consideration should also be given possibly to integrating with other forms of gambling. And then finally, our sense was that the industry should be holistically reviewed. The current proposals are simply that we change one regulator and make it into a statutory regulator. We thought that there actually needed to be a more holistic review of the whole structure of the industry and its funding model. In terms of the lottery, our sense was that the current revenue maximization model should be continued, that the legislation should be amended to define sports pools more clearly and to take away any ambiguity about the responsibility for the regulation of sports pools, and then finally that grant making should be professionalized. We also were asked to consider new forms of gambling, and there were a number that we'll just go through fairly briefly. The first is dog racing. And there is a very strong lobby around dog racing, but it is quite a small sector. We visited the UK, the dog racing regulator in the UK and I think in Australia as well. And certainly in the UK, which is a very established jurisdiction, what was very clear is that they still had not found answers to the problems of overbreeding, the retirement of dogs, and the traceability of the animals. And so our sense was that given the limited demand there is for that form of gambling and racing in South Africa, and the problems that are associated with it, we did not think that it should be legalized. And in fact, our recommendation is that the current prohibition on it should be enforced. But our report does offer some guidelines for regulation should the minister decide to legalize the industry. Bush racing, which is informal racing in rural areas, horse racing in rural areas, is a slightly different situation for us because firstly, the issues of breeding and traceability have already been largely addressed by the existing industry, although those are not new issues that would arise if one were to allow limited forms of bush racing. The key issues really are the regulation of the actual races and then the treatment of animals by their owners. In the UK, informal races, they call them informal races, are permitted and are in fact licensed by local authorities, but they're supervised and only licensed operators, betting operators, can take bets at these races. Of course, without the gambling, much of this probably wouldn't be happening. So our recommendation is that consideration could be given to implementing a similar model in South Africa. We also found that Fafi dice and cards are growing forms of gambling, illegal gambling in South Africa, but that a lot more research needs to be conducted in this area to understand it. So that was our recommendation was that further research should be done. Then there are two big areas of gambling that are currently probably perpetrated, maybe a better word, which is poker and online gambling. Now, poker tournaments are allowed in casinos, but I think there is a lot of poker happening in a number of unlicensed venues. And poker tournament organizers, who really are the people organizing the opportunities, are not licensed. So we proposed that the tournament operators themselves should be licensed and that these licensed operators should be able to run poker tournaments at licensed venues. So that would extend the opportunity beyond casinos, where it's limited to at the moment. We also thought that occasional licenses could possibly be issued by local authorities for more social kind of poker events at non-gambling venues such as restaurants. But this would have to be very clearly limited. And of course, opening this up creates the opportunity for abuse. It is happening, though, at restaurants quite a lot. And it's probably better for it to be regulated. We had a number of presentations from poker operators and poker players, and there is a sense that the rules for poker and the rake should be regulated and should be applied equally across the board for the game poker, whether that's land-based or online. And we felt very strongly that standalone poker houses should not be permitted. Poker should only be played at licensed gambling venues. Now, possibly the most controversial area is the online gambling area, and I know the committee spent much time deliberating on this. Our sense from our international visits is that prohibition isn't particularly effective anywhere. It might be more effective in countries such as the US, where they have a lot more resources, but even in those jurisdictions, they are now considering legalizing online gambling. What is very dangerous is that if we don't act quite quickly as a country, the illegal operators will become too entrenched, and there will be fewer incentives for more credible operators to become licensed. In Italy, the approach, and in fact in Europe, the approach increasingly is to license nationally, and also not just to license Interactive, but all forms of online gambling. So online betting, betting exchanges, online poker. In the interpretation in the South African law at the moment, we've distinguished online betting, for example, which is in the provincial domain and is being licensed provincially versus Interactive. And we think it's quite important that that is reviewed and that a more holistic approach is taken to online and other forms of mobile gambling. And we propose that a licensing framework should be introduced, which I think has been proposed already. 10 licenses, I think, is provided for at the moment for Interactive. In Italy, just for information, they've placed their initial limit on 200, and 200 is very high, but maybe 10 is a little bit too low initially. If one brings online into the fold, that means online betting bookmakers as well. Advertising in Italy, it was found that advertising should be linked to a license, and in fact, their regulator is very effective at making players aware when they are entering unlicensed sites. So, through email communication, they warn punters that they are now on an unlicensed site and therefore have no protection in it. They found that it is very effective. And advertising, in a sense, is the incentive for bringing for people to become licensed in a national jurisdiction. So advertising is closely linked with this, and clearly there need to be strong enforcement mechanisms in place, which would probably include a bigger role for banks. And then finally, our thoughts were that there should be identity checking and limits for play, so that punters can't play unlimited amounts. The amount that they can play on a daily basis should be limited, and this should be mandatory. In terms of the social impact, we proposed that a national strategy for responsible gambling should be developed, and it should be developed jointly by national and provincial regulators, government, the industry, and also civil society. It does play a role. And industry funding currently is based on what the industry thinks is appropriate rather than on a budget that is associated with a national strategy. So we think that the strategy should be costed, and then the budget should be developed around that. There should also be funding for independent treatment organizations. They're currently not receiving any funding, either through the NGRP or other sources. And there should also be funding for independent research. We felt that consideration should also be given to requiring a single industry program that is both for the lottery and for other forms of gambling, and that for now the voluntary nature of the program should be retained. There should be more emphasis placed and tighter monitoring of measures to prevent minors from entering gambling venues, and also self-excluded persons. In our visits to casinos and other gambling venues, we were not convinced that sufficient emphasis was placed on this, and we thought that this needed to be more tightly monitored, and that better measures need to be put in place to monitor it, and that advertising, which is largely regulated at a provincial level, should probably be regulated at a more overarching level, because it is critical, actually, for the sumptuary model, that advertising is limited. The big issue, of course, is advertising for the lottery, and that there would be different rules if one maintains these two models. If the lottery is to be revenue maximizing, then it needs to be able to advertise. that is the difficulty. And I think that the choice needs to be made about whether or not, I think what's very difficult is if one expects the lottery to maximize revenue, but one doesn't allow the advertising, then they are not going to be able to meet the objective. And then it's probably better to review the approach and the objective. In terms of the regulatory framework, our sense was that there needed to be a clearer delineation of roles between national and provincial governments, and that the role that we propose for provincial governments should be to license and regulate land-based gambling activities, because it makes sense for provinces to regulate and enforce those activities because of proximity to the gambling venues. But that this needed to happen within a framework of national laws and standards. We also propose that new measures be introduced to ensure greater compliance with these norms and standards. And our proposal was that compliance with these norms should actually be audited by the auditors of the provincial gambling board, and that these reports should be submitted as part of the annual return reports, both to provincial and to the national legislature. Our sense was that the role of national regulator should be to regulate and license those activities that can only take place on a national level and should be regulated on a national level. So this would include the licensing and regulation of the lottery, sports pools, online gambling, and then all these national registers that currently exist and the central electronic monitoring system. We also proposed that the National Lotteries Board, that consideration should be given to combining the resources and the expertise of the National Lotteries Board and the National Gambling Board. We could see a lot of synergy and a lot of value because the national lottery regulation is largely electronic. And we thought that there are skills in the National Lotteries Board that would probably be usefully applied to the regulation of online gambling. At the same time, in the National Gambling Board, there is an inspectorate, and there is inspectorate and enforcement capacity. And again, that is something that is probably less developed in the National Lotteries Board. So that's where we saw the synergy in this, and we thought it may be effective to have a single national regulator dealing with these areas. We also proposed that the National Lotteries Distribution Trust Fund be transferred, the administration of that, from the National Lotteries Board to an independent grant-making body that can still be accountable to the National Lotteries Board or to the single regulator or directly accountable to the Department of Trade and Industry. Because I think it's very difficult as a regulator to have this sort of dual mandate of grant-making and just fund distribution on the one hand and then the more enforcement, regulatory, monitoring functions on the other. So we thought it might be better to create a clearer distinction between those two functions. And then we also thought that the National Gambling Policy Council could be reviewed, that instead of reaching agreement on policy, national policy there, it should probably be more of a forum where there could be a lot more discussion, where there could be joint monitoring of, for example, the implementation of a national policy on problem gambling and the treatment and education, so that there could be certain things that could be monitored through the Policy Council, but that it's not been effective as a body that resolves disputes and that reaches consensus on policy issues. A role for local authorities is also outlined in terms of the issuance of these occasional licenses, but also in terms of zoning and business licenses. And this is quite important, certainly, for the LPM industry. So our sense was that guidelines needed to be issued here. And then finally, we proposed that Parliament should have an oversight role over national policy with the provincial gambling boards, in a sense, being accountable to Parliament in terms of compliance with national policy. So not in terms of their provincial role, but in terms of those overarching norms and standards. So just very briefly, finally, the change in the framework that we've proposed. So in terms of the current framework, the National Lotteries Board does licensing and provincial gambling boards do licensing. I think a licensing role was envisaged for the NGB with respect to interactive gambling, but largely the NGB's role right now is harmonization and oversight. And then policy is formulated by the DTI and by the National Gambling Policy Council. So the change that we're proposing is that licensing should take place at three levels, at a local government level for occasional licenses, at a provincial level for land-based activities, and at a national level effectively for online and national kind of activities that would include the lottery and other forms of online gambling. That oversight and harmonization should really happen through Parliament and through the National Gambling Policy Council, and that policy then, national policy, should remain the preserve of the Department of Trade and Industry and the Minister of Trade and Industry. And that, honourable members, is a summary of our report. It is a 200-page report, and I realise I've taken up an hour. There is a lot of information still in the report that's not been presented, but we welcome the opportunity to engage with you on any of these issues and points. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Luden, for giving us that broad overview from, I think, an 188-page report, which I understand had already been reduced. So this has certainly made it far more manageable to assimilate and would appear to have addressed the concerns that we raised in 2009, and that was with respect to the underage gambling, compulsive gambling, the risks of fraud and money laundering in that regard, the needs of proper protection, etc., and also to carefully evaluate the possibility of a continued prohibition against the benefits of legalising all of this. And we appreciate you looking into the technology aspects which we ourselves were concerned about with respect to online gambling, as well as the newer forms of gambling, other forms ranging from dog racing and the like, and where certain changes or where online gambling, interactive gambling, has been in operation, but perhaps under review at the current stage. Now, members, I think this has been one of our longer briefings in this regard, but it is a very challenging industry. And we've already just a glimpse of it in terms of, you know, just the model, revenue on the one hand, sumptuary on the other hand. But we are required to deliberate on it. We've had the report a long, long time with us, and we've had various summaries distributed by our own content specialist in this regard. So notwithstanding that more than half the committee is new, I think by now you should have studied this report. So we're going to suggest to everyone that we do take our tea break now. So far we've now kept on track, 10 o'clock to 11, the briefing. I would certainly like members to return as soon as possible, particularly those who've requested we try and conclude our business for the day earlier. So it is tea break now. I would like to resume no later than 11:15, if possible. 11. Thank you.
Alicia. I've just made up. Well, I had a 9:30 conference call I had to do with the guys in Brazil. I've been all over the place. I've been very stuck in Antigua. I've got a client who's licensed out of Antigua. Meeting with Andre. They're terrific. They're absolutely terrific.
The guys in Malta.
You know what? I used to have a very close relationship with Mario Galea, and I haven't had a hell of a lot to do. I've had a lot to do for licensees with Malta since then, but not actually with the LGA. Andre as well. I'm hoping to be in Vienna in a couple of weeks' time or two at the IMGL conference, which I should see him at, but I thought my page is for my passport, so I think I'm going to have a problem getting a change. This is interesting. Hopefully something will change too. I've just been all over the place and really sticking my head down and working, and my practice is so busy. There's so much kind of interesting stuff. You know, 80% of the stuff that I do is not South African related. So
I can imagine. So I hear these days, a lot of attending groups are getting a lot of
Well, my practice has always been sort of the online side.
Yeah.
Dealing a lot with Malta, Gibraltar, and now in Cuba the last year as well. There hasn't been a hell of a lot of movement. You know, the AC side, for example, when they're on the judge the AC side.
Thank you.